Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I am J.L. Covan, and I am here, as always, with Producer Mike. Hello, Producer Mike.
Hi, everybody. Hi, J.L. How you doing?
Great. I'm trimming all the fat this week. Nope, see? Exactly. I'm trimming all the fat this week. Notice I didn't do any banter, any attempt at banter. We're going lean and mean, because I leave here feeling one of two ways, Mike.
Yes.
High as a kite.
Okay.
Or in the fucking gutter.
Because of me?
Well, not because, but because I feel like if I... Once I hit that like 103 mark in time, it really just always, no matter how good I have felt, I always go to the, like, I'm good like 2 days later, mm-hmm. where I'm like, all right, maybe that episode didn't suck. So we're going to keep it lean so I can go home feeling great.
Okay.
Great. I have some gigs coming up. I know this is my comedy fans' least favorite part of my life is the fact that I do comedy. But I've got a lot of shows coming up this weekend, folks, this weekend, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at the Comedy Zone, Friday and Saturday. Next Saturday, the 21st of December in Rutherford, New Jersey at the Williams Center, Donald Trump recording his first ever stand-up special. You're going to want to be there for that. Mitch McConnell is emceeing. My friend Chris Lamberth is featuring. Pretty good show for him to be in between Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump on a lineup. It's almost like the MC has to go change into an entirely different outfit and come back out as Donald Trump. That'll be a lot of fun. Everything is on my website, but maybe just go to my link tree or go to any other social media site, because I'm having issues with my website calendar, but you know where to find my gigs and whatnot. After that, I mean, look on my website, my New Year's Eve show. I'm just outside of Harrisburg in some town where I have a feeling all the people who were thought Harrisburg was too woke move to. Mm-hmm. Like if Central PA got too woke for you, you move to the town that I'm performing in during New Year's Eve. So that's on my website. January 16th, Rochester, New York. February 28th, Charlotte, North Carolina. And the end of March, Las Vegas, Nevada for the Pete Dominic stand-up pod jam. Unfortunately, we won't be recording an episode of this show because somebody will not come out to Vegas. So on that note.
Correct.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I said it with complete conviction and sincerity. What if somebody put $10 million in a briefcase and labeled it Mike Coscarelli and put it in Las Vegas and you had to fly to Vegas to get it? Because I know you could do what I do. You could just be like, okay, in 2 days, I'll see you.
I would take a train. I had to fly to get it.
What if they said you get $500,000 if you take train or bus or car, but you get $10 million if you fly?
I'll take the $500,000. I'm not greedy.
What if they say
$500,000 would change my life? That's enough for me.
What if they say $500 and travel expenses if you go anyway but flying, $20 million if you fly?
Well, no, I wouldn't take the $500. That's not enough for me to.
But I'm asking about the second part. Dead air. Let's move on.
Okay.
And obviously, check out the Patreon, folks. Posting a lot of stuff there. That's how we're funding this build a candidate case and also just how I pay some bills. Mike, some big stories.
Huge.
Big stories. And the funniest thing is I worked with a guy named Juan Soto at the Bronx District Attorney's office. Yeah. Imagine he was still there. How confused all the Latin women would be in New York. You know Juan Soto? You goddamn right. Who's this? This is Juan Soto. This is my colleague, Juan Soto. But the two big stories, obviously, you know, this show, I work across the street from the West Side Hilton, where Brian Thompson, the former CEO of United Health, was assassinated. Mm-hmm. I think that's the appropriate term. I think he's a significant enough business leader to call it an assassination mm-hmm. and not just a killing. Mm-hmm. And social media was abuzz with reactions. Many of them shockingly callous, even to this comedian. And I have my thoughts, and I obviously always like to weigh in specifically on the comedy community's reaction, because there's no group of people in America that I think have less ground to stand on to make any moral pronouncement of any kind than the stand-up comedy community.
That we agree on that.
Yeah. I work in an exploitative business. I fuck over colleagues and friends and strangers. I work for peanuts. I choose not to get health insurance and then post GoFundMes when something bad happens to me, even though I could get Medicaid because it is available to people with no jobs like me, comedian, if you look at my job title on social media.
Yeah.
And but I'm the first one to become John Wick and Robin Hood and fucking Arthur Fleck from the first Joker. The minute somebody with a job and wealth and a family gets killed, it's like, well, he fucking deserved it. Yeah. Tired of those takes, but we'll get into that. And then the other story was today, I believe Daniel Penny was acquitted. And the reason I'm bringing these two stories up, people can tell from the title of the episode, the sort of theme that is, you know, related to like how I'm going to present to the country. But I think we can make some specific cases on some current events these days. But Daniel Penny was acquitted. And I also saw sort of an opposite reaction, which was the typical, the liberals obviously found it distasteful, disgusting, another sort of George Floyd type killing. Whereas what I found as the lawyer in me sort of thought, no, I can see where there'd easily be reasonable doubt here, because that's the standard. The standard is not, did he do it? Probably. The standard is beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think when this guy was clearly, and his name was Jordan Neely, somebody with severe mental health issues, I think schizophrenia, homeless. I think if I read the bio right, I think there was some abuse or violence in the home, like as a teenager. Really, the kind of life where I look with pity, genuine pity, and go, wow, what a horrible life. What a sad, tragic life. And that's not me saying, therefore, he couldn't have scared people on the train and made people fear for their safety. That's me saying that's sad. Now, of course, if you're a right winger, just like the left wing has to all of a sudden become, you know, Che Guevara and Fidel when somebody with a job gets murdered. I'm exaggerating, obviously. Yeah. but the flip side is a lot of right wingers going, this crackhead piece of shit is a filthy scumbag.
Yeah.
Daniel Penny's a hero. Oh, okay. So it wasn't, and this is one of those things. This is the Trump world we've inherited. But I'm starting to think, Mike, this is really becoming like JL's opening thought. Sometimes it's 8 minutes, sometimes it's 78 minutes. But I'm starting to think that Donald Trump really isn't the, I know people said he's a symptom. I don't even know if he's a symptom. I think he might be the right president for this country. I know we don't want to think, but I'm starting to think that this is who we are.
I've had that very same thought, JL, and I think I had that thought really leading into the election.
Like
that's why I wasn't surprised. I mean, I called the Trump win a year ago, you know?
I mean, against Sleepy Joe. You bet you were less bold in your pronouncements. You were very he'll beat Joe.
Yeah, but I think I was a little more optimistic than logical when it came to the.
But you don't get to revise that. Like I can't say I was dead wrong, but that was actually the optimism.
But yeah, I know.
Was right if you discount the optimism.
I know. But I'm saying I do think that the place that I was coming from when I originally said like Trump, why would Trump lose? Is because I know enough people in this country.
Right.
And I just think that everything
Northeast, really.
No, but even in the Northeast.
I'm kidding.
No,
that's a flight joke. You don't know that many people in the country.
But I think that even in the Northeast, like if people that I knew in New Jersey were basically like I was an outlier with those people.
Right.
Then what are the people in the places where we expect Trump to like be the guy like that everybody loves? What is it like in the red states, the real red states, you know? And I just think that you're right. And I think that this is it's almost more shocking these days. You've been saying it for the last couple of weeks, and it's the first time I've really thought about it. But the moral responsibility that you feel, it's just a lot easier to openly be a scumbag because apparently you're easier forgiven in this country if you are it's like an open carry scumbag license
as opposed to
trying to be virtuous.
Conceal carry your scumbagness.
Right.
Yeah, now it's like, I'm a piece of shit, brother. Right. It made me realize because we seem to have these two cases where you have like opposite sides sort of condemning one. It's not good enough to be like, I'm the shooter, you know, as somebody made, I heard this, like the Chris Rock quote, I'm not saying he should have killed him, but I understand. If it stopped at that point, that'd be one thing. But it really went to this kind of eat the rich, fuck this guy, kill them all. And it's like, okay, you first.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean,
no, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
We're like, and the flip side of it's not good enough to be like, hey, Daniel Penny is, you know, I don't think under our system of justice, Daniel Penny should go to jail for that. Even if I'm not sure that he didn't have some malice in his heart or prejudice or overreact, I'm not prepared to be like, people were scared on the train.
Right.
Like they were nervous. They were uncomfortable in a way where the guy was speaking in a way. We've been on the, I got to tell you, I was once on a train. Now this guy didn't sound like the guy I'm about to describe, but I was on an A train. And now thank God I was getting off at 34th Street. But let me tell you something. If I wasn't getting off at 34th Street, I was getting off at 34th Street. This guy was about 6'2", 210, 205.
Yeah.
Nothing but muscle.
Yeah.
And insanity. No shirt on.
Yeah.
And was just like, ah, ah, ah. And I was like, oh, are we at 34th Street? Ma'am, you'll be fine. And I got off.
I love those. Good luck, everybody.
No, the big guy's leaving. What the fuck? We thought he was at least going to be a human shield.
No.
So I've had that experience. I'm somebody who often will intervene when I feel like I can make a difference. Mm-hmm. But this guy, it was as if like, Evander Holyfield from 1998 yes. is pissed and off his meds. Sir, can you hear me? Please stop, sir. You're making the people uncomfortable. Next thing you know, I'm just being beaten to death while everybody's going, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for drawing his fire.
Yeah.
We're all getting out at 42nd Street. We'll tell one of the texting cops that there's a problem because they say when there's a... To leave the train and tell the cop. And then while you're in Columbus Circle getting murdered, the cops will walkie-talkie each other and hopefully someone will be able to identify your body later tonight. So, but the same thing is that everybody has to go above. It's almost like, do we all think that being empathetic or nuanced is pussy and woke or something? Because it's like, we can't just be like, hey, that's sort of bad, but I get it. People are very angry with healthcare, blah, blah, blah. Or, hey, this guy shouldn't be convicted of a crime, but this is a tragedy. No, he's got to be a worthless piece of shit scumbag.
But I don't think they're quite the same.
Oh, no. But I think there's a degree of difference to each one, but there's also this general, I think, thing running through society I will absolutely I said this during the episode we did on death. Everybody go revisit it if you haven't heard it or seen it, where I did make the point of like, I think the information overload we're getting is making us desensitized to death and to like bad news, and it's just like more bad news. I'm kind of depressed.
Yeah,
it's like bad news used to fucking hit us in the gut. Now it's like, oh God, fuck this place.
Well, yeah.
Like, no, but I'm saying,
I know.
I feel like that's bad. And once again, I said this at to some people earlier today. I said, I really do believe this, that when history of man is like written 1,000 years from now and our little blip has been added to the story, they're going to mark the 2007 invention of the iPhone.
Yeah.
As the moment we peaked as a species and started to dip. I really believe, I mean, it's so weird to think that, like, you really think that? I do. I think the iPhone, the smartphone, it stopped us from innovating. It stopped people from becoming physicists, engineers, not all of them, but they could do apps.
Yeah.
And they could do, like, now we were focused on, there. It's the same thing when we deregulated the financial markets and people who might've gone into medicine or teaching, the money became so outrageous in the financial sector that it started to draw more talent than it used to.
Yeah.
More people are like, well, I mean, I can fucking be super rich. Like, and I feel like tech has done that too. Not that tech can't do great things, but we're probably attracting a lot more minds to the tech sector because tech money is out of control.
Tech is awful. I really do think, I mean, like, tech can't do great things. I really think that at this point. Mm-hmm. At this point, what is tech working on now? AI? I think that there is so much... People that are in tech are lying through their fucking teeth about how bad that is going to end up being for regular people that just do regular jobs.
Yeah.
Those jobs are going to go away the second anybody at the top of any kind of corporation can figure out how to eliminate a third of their workforce or more. And I just think it's ridiculous that everybody is psyched about the new iPhone, which has Apple Intelligence on it, and all this, how rapidly AI is moving. I just think it's crazy that people are psyched about it.
Yeah.
It's the end of you. Not like, it's not going to kill you. It's not like the Terminator. It's going to launch missiles.
No, you're going to kill yourself.
Yeah, maybe.
You're going to be like, no need to send the T-100. I hate myself.
Right.
I'll look in the mirror. Are you a J.L. Colvin?
Fuck you, asshole.
Hasta la vista podcast. Yeah, I think because I'm just saying, I think it is a broader, like this. These two things have made me think that decency, which I don't want to campaign on because that didn't work. It flat out didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't enthuse the people who maybe believe in it. And it turns off the people who think decency is bullshit. I need results. And I don't need your decency or your manners lessons. But I think these two things, what I meant to say about both of them was that I feel like we have, it's showing a sort of bipartisan loss of empathy in some cases, but also just decency. And I'm not above that. And I said, I get why people are joking. I'm not here to police jokes. Even if I wouldn't make them under certain, I have my biases. I'll fuck around with like a Trump family member passing away. It's not my brightest moment, but I'm not above doing a little tasteless joke if I think it's the right moment. But I do think the serious statements from non-comedians everywhere of like, you know, well, that's what these people are disgusting and they're the worst scum of the earth. And I'm like, but that's a slippery slope also. This idea, because he was the CEO. Was he the CEO for the last 25 years? He was CEO for a couple of years. And like, what if it came out now that actually he was a reform? I'm not saying he is. He was a reform-minded CEO who won. And I'm not saying that's the case, but people were so eager to like celebrate his death that I found it fucking disturbing. No, because you can't tell me everyone who is fucking complaining. This is my thing.
Yeah.
Everyone, just like we have stolen valor, people love to have stolen rage. Everyone who's saying good thing he's fucking dead. Oh, I'm sure you were just at the deathbed of your relative who was rejected for, do you even have United Health? And I'm not talking about everybody. It became this pile-on of like, good, I have somewhere to put my rage and I can make it seem completely justified.
Yeah, I don't think I disagree with you.
Okay.
I think that there is a lot of justified. I mean, how do you have health care, JL? Do you pay for it out of pocket?
Yes.
Okay. How can I ask how much you pay a month?
$600 a month.
Okay. So same. I was paying, I just got it lowered for the year coming up, but.
Mine went up. And you know who I have?
Who? United? Yeah. I think the thing is, man, if you talk to people, so when this happened, I also talked to friends of mine that are doctors. A friend is a surgeon. Oh,
doctors hate United.
Doctors hate health insurance companies in general. It doesn't seem like it. That was the thing. I think there's also a bit of a myth to people that aren't in the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
That think that maybe.
But doctors do. I've heard like that specifically hate. Like that.
Yeah,
of
they
all
say
of
it's
them,
the worst
hate,
one.
They say it's the worst.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's not like rage that's not coming from anywhere. It doesn't mean that somebody necessarily has to have United Healthcare specifically and has to be affected specifically by somebody in their family who is dead or denied coverage. I think that the implicit, the fact that the system exists the way that it does and gouges people, it gouges all of us. It doesn't just gouge. It's not like
my law firm insurance was kick ass.
great. I love to hear rich guys that have great health benefits.
You know what company it was?
United.
I
mean, like, for some people, look, I grew up in a household where my mother is a teacher, so there's union benefits that are like pretty good, you know, but there are no unions left. There's a handful of them.
You're bringing me to my point.
What?
Like, what part of my point, which is, and I hate to do the a few good men thing, which get out of here.
Yeah.
The a few good men thing, which is
not doing the character anymore.
No, we're going to take a break and then we actually have an exclusive, that people don't seem to realize, but can you just, I forget the name of our guest coming in after the break.
Oh yeah. Our guest coming in after the break is a young Italian man, a young stallion named Luigi Mangione.
Okay, well, that's an exclusive, I think, for our show.
That's right.
Stay tuned for that. But in A Few Good Men, Tom Cruise sets up Jack Nicholson's character, Colonel Nathan R. Jessup, with the, and your orders are always followed. And you blah, blah, blah. So why weren't your orders followed? And he forces him to either admit they weren't followed or you ordered it. And one way or the other, it's either your pride or... You admit what you like, or you admit what you did. So he admits what he did because he won't let. He's like, I fucking did it.
Yeah,
I absolutely did it. What I think of in this country is, I go, and I know you can bring up Bernie and 2016, but what I would say is, gee, it seems so many people want some variation of what Democrats offer, whether that's unions or improved health insurance. Boy, oh boy. With all this rage and all this eat the rich and all this justifiable anger over the health insurance business, who won the presidency?
I get that. But
that this country is like too dumb then to govern itself.
I mean, you don't think that there is enough of a healthcare lobby that, I mean, Obamacare wasn't necessarily great either. And I'm not saying that because I think that it's the Democrats' fault.
Right.
It's something, you know. But I think that there's a lot of red tape to cut through, specifically those fucking people. It's got to be as close to as strong of a... I mean, I don't know that anything's as strong as, like, the gun lobby. But you're dealing with... I mean, do you think the NRA, at its core, there's perhaps some evil behind it, motivating it?
Yeah, but you can't sneak up on them with a gun.
You can't, right? And no one ever will. But I'm saying, I think that a lot of the rage comes from the fact that it's sort of the peak of runaway capitalism. Because much to your chagrin, I am not anti-capitalist. I have socialist sentiments for sure and socialist sympathies, definitely. And I think that there are...
And a Truth Social account, I think, also. Yeah, jeez, Mike, yeah, that's, you know, weird. Me.
But that's weird. I don't think those are things that would, I don't think that it, you should eliminate capitalism to institute like a Danish government here in America. But I do think pillars of socialism are probably going to be needed for this place to keep functioning long term.
Yes.
And I do think that the healthcare system run by the healthcare companies is sort of the prime example of runaway capitalism at its peak. I mean, you're talking about, you know, lack of empathy. Who has less empathy than the fucking healthcare companies? And I think that at a certain degree, I do. Again, I don't think this guy should have been gunned down on the street. I mean, it happened and it sent a message for sure. But, you know, vigilante justice is its own thing and it's a different conversation. But it does seem like it is the first time that it's had some sort of ripple effect in healthcare companies. You know, now they're fucking hiding their boards and this anesthesia law that was reversed like a day
but which
after.
Wasn't as big a thing as people were making it out to. It was like, I mean, but yes.
But
I
again,
agree.
It's like, how their job is to sit in a room and figure out ways to fuck people harder and harder on their medical bills. That's what they do because it doesn't seem to benefit doctors. They all complain that health insurance companies restrict medications for their patients, which obviously is an ethical problem for doctors. And on top of that, I have a friend who's a surgeon, a source that I will keep nameless, who says that he'll do a surgery sometimes for somebody that is a very necessary surgery to save their life. And then a health insurance company can later decide after the fact that it wasn't necessary, but by, I don't know why they have the edict on that, but they can decide that it wasn't necessary and not pay him for having done the surgery.
Right.
So nobody likes these people and they're fucking everybody over. So I, again, I don't think that it's a great thing that a guy got shot in the street, but at some point you are at the person at the top who I'm sure there's a board and he's not just, you know, alone in his decision making, but he is responsible for a lot of people either being thrown into debt that they'll never be able to pay back, or in some cases, probably the loss of life of a lot of people that are, that have loved ones in this country. And I it just seems like something that kind of, I don't know. I can't, it's very difficult for me to see it any other way. And I'll just say that it's not like I was rooting for something like this to happen. It's just very hard for me to have sympathy. And I think that that's the, I feel like this is the same thing as this is a person that makes big decisions that affect people's lives more often than not negatively. And it's not in a fun way that it's like, oh, it's just an extra step for somebody. It's just a little bit harder. It fucks people's lives up and has probably led to deaths. I mean, do you disagree?
That's probably the best set of words you've ever uttered on this podcast. So take a bow. I don't think changes are coming that people think this might lead to.
I don't either, to be honest.
I think this idea of, I still believe, and this is a harder case to make than like the Trump thing, because I get what you're saying and there's a lot of truth in obviously what you just said.
Yeah.
There is obviously a system in place that is so layered between health insurance, capitalism, our system of government, that like this dude was at best a small cog in that giant machinery, mm-hmm. a bigger cog than me.
Right.
But then, you know, I don't want to do the slippery slope thing where I go, well, what about the law firms that represent, you know, I mean, they're big players, whoever they are. Is it time to start gunning down managing partners of law firms? And pharma, what about pharma?
Yeah.
And the, you know, I am not one of these sort of, capitalism is the greatest system ever invented. Like, I hate when I get that boilerplate sort of like, it's the greatest system of wealth. Right. I sound like Vivek Ramaswamy. It's the greatest system of wealth generation ever invented by man. But it's, I also think without some of that motivation, you know, it's, you don't, I'm sorry to do this. Like, I use this analogy a lot. I say, you don't get Michael Jordan as the second greatest player of all time in basketball history without the guy who slap punches Steve Kerr in the face and gambles compulsively.
Right.
I don't think you get many of the advances we've had, many of the medications that people want to begin with, without the incentives that are sometimes cruel in this country.
Yeah.
So obviously, I think we have not struck the balance we need. Clearly.
Right.
United always covered my bills. Just want to say that. We're not sponsored by them. Yeah. In fact, I pay them.
Yeah.
I wish they paid me.
Yeah.
But I just think, I still think this somehow, this is the raw, this is what I will say, and then we'll take a break. But this to me, and I want to talk about a little bit more about Daniel Penny also, but
yeah,
because I do think, though they are different, I think all of us in America in our own way are showing a lack of sympathy and a sort of bloodlust, whether it's for homeless black men. And I'm not equating the two, but I do find it disturbing that it seems like we all are sort of like, I need somewhere, whether justified, somewhat justified, or not really justified, to put my anger. And I think when I look at this country, though, I still think, just like with Trump, to a lesser degree here, we let people off the hook still. Like, in other words, we have the power to change. I don't think, I do think it is within our we put in politicians who are anti-union, anti-worker, anti-affordable health insurance.
Yeah.
Like we're doing it to our, like, we are still doing it. And I know, yes, I believe that the system has major issues with it, both politically, economically, health insurance. Everything here is like some big fucking vicious maze. But we still do it to ourselves. And this guy, like, killing the CEO allows the debate to change to, like, I have no I'm not doing you, but I'm saying, yeah, I have no sympathy for this guy. He's a fucking scumbag. His industry is hurting people, not helping people. And I go, but we've still empowered the system that we have. And we're looking for literally a magic bullet to change things when it's still us that can change it.
But so, this,
but I think what I was going to say is this, yeah, is where social media and what I brought in about the death episode, this is where I'm thinking maybe we don't have the actual capacity to make big change anymore. We're too susceptible to these constant messages. Yeah. We become desensitized to caring and issues. Like, we're not talking about the thing people are not saying. Some people are, don't get me, but obviously most of it is jokes or good or that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's still a message of, like, anger. And, right, and that can be satiated briefly by this rage. The anger is temporary. What are you going to do when this story fades, like every other fucking story fades in our social media feed? This guy will be gone from our minds in a week, but he'll be on the podcast after the break. And what do we do then? We will get back into that, like, just more stuff and fuck this. Hey, something bad happened to somebody. Good. Fuck them. And we're going to change nothing. And it feels like we've become, this is the scarier thing to me. Not that we can't recognize change. Not that we have a divided country. It's that I believe the cell phone app, social media bombardment has changed us to where we have less empathy, less caring, less attention, less focus, less long-term planning and thinking. And that to me is the scary part, because I don't think this is actually going to do a single fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah, and it's
beyond, which makes me sad. I'm sorry. That's what almost makes me sad, because I go, well, he will die in vain.
Yeah.
Like, if you told
okay, that's an argument.
If you told me this guy, you know, you can't make an omelet without breaking an egg. If you told me healthcare as we know it will change incredibly in this country, and although that's a sad, terrible thing, when history is written, this will be viewed as a watershed moment where somebody...
Friends Fernadad.
You know. There you go. Brian Thompson dad.
Right.
But it won't. And right. And then I go, so he died in vain. So some kids grow up without their dad. They're innocent. They did nothing wrong. And we... What did we get? A week of jokes and roasts and righteous eat the rich on social media.
Well, right. Honestly, that's the best point that I've heard for empathy or sympathy.
But you're really going to get that, like, on this podcast.
You get both sides. But I think that, like, to your point, the two things that I've kind of taken away from this, exactly what you just said, we are beyond social media and the phone. The problem is that we have made everything streamlined in a way where, like, the computer does it all. So, again, talking about this specific CEO and the changes that he could have made, I mean, I'm sure he had some idea of the inefficiencies in the healthcare system and how expensive it is. However, you know, he doesn't have to. How much time did that guy spend in hospitals? How much time did that guy spend talking to any Americans that have any kind of we have no idea. And he doesn't really have to, because the bureaucracy of the company that he runs handles it all. And beyond that, there are call systems. There are, emails that get sent. It's the same way the fucking IRS doesn't work right. It's the same. It's the reason that a lot of this stuff doesn't run correctly is because there's, like, an inbox that leads nowhere. The complaint never actually gets heard. You don't actually have to have
face-to-face. That's the name of my indie band, by the way, Inbox to Nowhere.
Inbox to Nowhere. But the complaint never actually gets heard, and it just becomes this whole circle jerk where everybody feels helpless. The people at the top that are fucking people over never actually have to see the face of the people that they're fucking over.
My knee surgery and shoulder surgery were paid completely by United, but continue.
Got it. And I think that the one thing to your point about this being in vain, there was a time, you know, human history is riddled with violent revolutions throughout the history of time. And we live in such a modern time.
But they never had flat screen TVs, cell phones, fast food, DoorDash. Exactly. We are your friend Karl Marx once called religion the opiate of the masses. I can tell you as a weekly mass attender, the masses aren't coming to mass anymore. It's me right. and the old folks. So what we have now is a religion of consumption,
right.
a culture of convenience. Ooh, put it down in the book.
Right.
And this is killing us. This it is WALL-E. Did you ever see WALL-E?
Of course. It's a great movie.
It is WALL-E, but not in the fat floating chair way, but we're there mentally already.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
We are in the floating chair.
We're pretty close to the floating chair too.
Yeah. And we have to come to grips. And this is why I feel bad for this man and his family. And I know people who listen to me a long enough time, especially on bonus episodes, I am somebody, all joking aside, I'm a very empathetic person. And I do take to heart the values of sort of forgiveness that I learned through my church. But I do feel bad for this guy, but I look at our society and on so many issues that we've talked about, I see a culture that is broken.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I brought up two examples, not equating them, but seeing that it's not good enough to just be like, I feel bad for this man, but you know what? What I'm really hoping for is that the silver lining of this is that my silver plan with United starts to cover a lot more, and that people won't, that this saves lives. There's a ripple effect that saves lives, but I don't celebrate a guy getting shot in the back of the fucking head going to a meeting, you know, I don't celebrate that.
Yeah.
And the same way I can say Daniel Penny, maybe he's a scumbag.
Yeah.
He might be a scumbag.
But it's nobody's right to make that decision to kill him in the street. And I fundamentally agree with that as a pillar of justice.
But it's and the other but with the Daniel Penny thing, it's the idea of like, but isn't that enough to say, hey, maybe this guy was scared. Maybe this guy helped people on the train. And did the guy have to die? No. Should the guy have died? Probably not.
Right.
But I can't put myself, I can at least admit in that guy's position, maybe I would have accidentally or on purpose done the same thing because the adrenaline and the fear and the thinking you're keeping people safe.
Yeah.
And maybe not. Maybe he did. But in our system of justice, that sounds like reasonable doubt to me. And we don't have to then go the next step and treat the victim like a worthless scumbag, crackhead piece of shit.
Right.
Like, when did we get to this point where it's like, and I do think, and I detest Donald Trump and so much of what he represents, but I'm really starting to think that he may be a reflection that he, you know, like swimmers in the Olympics, where it's like, I remember in 2008, the guy running anchor on one of Michael Phelps's races that preserved his like 8 for 8 gold caught the French guy by getting in his wave.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not supposed to go too close to the rope because the competitor can like use some of that for momentum. Maybe Donald Trump is just running parallel to America. Maybe he's not changing the culture.
Right.
Maybe he is running parallel to who we are. And that is the thing that it seems people, that is so much harder to address than to say, we all have to look in the mirror, turning off the TV, fuck off, don't tell me what I have to do. I think we all have to basically start to say, why are we so indecent?
Yeah.
Why are we so crude? Why do we not care? Because if we cared about everybody, you know, I'm not saying Bernie Sanders would be in office, but you'd have some Bernie Sanders policies. You'd have Kamala Harris. Maybe you'd have a Clinton Sanders ticket ending up the last two terms. Something you'd have something where people, you know, you need a Hillary Clinton. You need a thinker, a strategist, a cold-hearted person in some ways. but you also need sympathy, empathy, somebody who puts people first. And we as a country can seem incapable of doing that now. It's not even like we have stage four fucking cancer. Yeah. Like we've diagnosed the problem, but it's in our fucking bones now. Like we're riddled with anger and cynicism and no empathy. And like it's a disturbing place to be. And it's a loop because that's the more you want. Like, fortunately for me, I hate so many of the people that follow me on social media that I'm not intoxicated by it.
Yeah.
I detest it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ugh. Like when I go to work and they make me put my phone away for the day, I'm like, oh, like Andy Dufresne stepping out of shit into the rain. And we as a country, the diagnosis is clear. We have become worse people. There are a lot of things. And big tech. See, big tech's smart, though, because the health insurance company, you could probably have people at United and other places like Kaiser Permanente, who like on that chart everybody was sharing. I wanted to be like, well, then why didn't you go to Kaiser Permanente if they're so fucking good?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but that is partly, you could use this as an ad for who should I get health insurance with?
Right.
Because it seems like Kaiser Permanente is kicking ass and taking names. United, not so much. Now, United's also the biggest. Yeah. So they might attract a disproportionate amount of people who have... whether it's not to make the case for United, but they've never rejected any of my claims, but is that they may have a disproportionate amount of like tougher cases because they've cast a wider net. And without getting into that, I know they'd reject a higher percentage, but they might have a higher percentage of like iffy cases, whatever. I'm not trying to defend health insurance in this country. What I'm saying is join Kaiser Permanente. But it's to me, it's, I don't know. I think I've made my fucking case. We should take a break.
Yeah. Let's take a break.
It's, you know, that we have the diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I think I'm afraid it's terminal and it's a loop. We go back into the social media. We try to escape and we go to the place that's gotten us here. Less human interaction, less caring, more doom scrolling, more short-term thinking, more let me see more stuff, let me see more. And this all contributes to what we are now. So let's take a break and we'll be back with, I'm sorry, remind me of our guest's name again.
Our guest is Luigi Mangione.
Okay, seems like a nice young man. We'll get him in here. Thanks. After this break.
And we're back on Rain on Your Parade. It's Mike doing the rejoin because JL, I mean, you know the history of this show. Every time we get a guest in studio, JL just happens to run out the door, is in the bathroom, and our guest is here, Luigi Mangione. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Mike, so good to be here. I'm so excited. And, you know, I could smell the United Health coming off that guy. So, you know.
Yeah. He's such a fucking scab piece of shit.
I was sitting in the waiting room and I thought I heard him say, they covered all mine. They covered all my procedures. Yeah. Well, there's one procedure that I can assure him they can't cover.
Well, Luigi, I mean, you're...
I get so mad when I think of a guy walking around with United Health Insurance that I, you know how it comes out of me like a Sunday dinner, Mike. But I just, you know, I got to pull it in. My lawyer tells me I need to sort of compose myself a little more.
Smart.
But, you know, when I think health insurance, you know, like Al Pacino, remember Heat?
Yeah.
Because she had a great ass. That's what health insurance does to me. I go crazy.
Yeah.
But no, I'm you know what? I'm a UPenn guy. I'm a, you know, I can compose. Yeah, cum laude, by the way.
Yeah.
Graduate. That's honors.
Yeah, you know? I know. Yeah.
And it's, you know,
cum laude, that's Italian.
Well, you know what my girlfriend says? You come loudly too, baby.
I mean, I know that your name is very Italian, but I just never took you as a guy that could get so heated to become, you know, frankly, almost a caricature of our people.
We're passionate people.
We are passionate people.
That's right. Some days I wake up, I go to a Starbucks at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
After 10 days at a hostel. By the way, I like the old country, but some of these Europeans smell like shit. And, you know, sometimes you get so fired up that you just walk by a Hilton after 10 days of planning and bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah, right.
But, no, it's, you know, I wanted to send a message. You know, obviously our healthcare system is broken.
Yeah.
But also we're giving kids too many drugs. you know, I think I know this guy outside, Mr. United Healthcare cheerleader. I get a little worked up. You know, you're lucky. You know, the cop missed the knife that I put up my ass. So I still can, I can still take out one more health guy. But,
did it hurt getting it up there?
It's a full, you know, it's like a, you're folded up, you know, yeah, come on, Mike. Yeah. It's not a fanook
right
kind of move. It's just self-defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, so I got a little bit of the Bernie Sanders in me, but I also got a little bit of the, you know, kind of RFK. Mm-hmm. You know, let's get the kids off the drugs and let's get the CEOs off the planet. That's sort of my,
yeah,
you know, I could run, don't you think? I could run maybe for office. Well,
I just assume that your trial, if you happen to be arrested.
Talk about free advertising, Mike. Yes, I plan on taking the stand. I approve this message by my balls.
I just imagine your trial is going to be a bit of a circus because it seems like the people of America seem to be on your side. What do you think about that? Were you expected to be considered sort of like a cult hero?
I didn't do it for that, but that's okay by me. I'm not going to lie. But what I will say this is, I am obviously not going to be getting a lot of the conservative, Fox News puss.
Yeah.
But I just hope, you got to weed through the left wing because sometimes you get a lot of hotties and sometimes it's, I'm guessing if you don't shave your legs, you don't shave anywhere else.
That's probably true.
So, you know, you got to weed through that literally, by the way.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, because I'm pen guy. So
yeah,
I know literary reference type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I get so worked up when I think about health insurance. But Mike, I'm glad to be here instead of that fucking centrist piece of shit. But I'm so glad, you know, I didn't expect any less that I knew you were a like-minded socialist Italian, fascist, anti-fascist anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate being here. I knew I could find a safe space with you, Mike. Comrade Coscarelli, we call you.
Always. Fighting for the working man.
But I don't know. I don't think they're going to be able to find a jury that can convict me.
I agree.
And we're going to be getting a lot of ladies on the jury, Mike. Oh, boy. We're going to have a lot of ladies, a lot of pussy hats and wet pussies on my jury, baby. So we're excited about that.
Yeah. I got to say, I mean, there's been a long history of federal agents harassing Italians, long history, Sacco and Vanzetti, John Gotti, who didn't do anything wrong.
No, he kept his neighborhood safe.
Yeah, kept his neighborhood
safe. Oh, what a crime. What a crime. Oh, you know,
and I think you're in, you know, you're among the long line of Italians.
When my Nona died early at the age of 99, I said, this cannot stand in this country. That is not right. That is not right. In my country, my Nona should get to 100.
Yeah.
99 is taken from us, Mike. Taken from us. And just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. So I was very upset about that. But also, Mike, I got to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm trying to keep it calm.
Yeah.
We're keeping it calm. We're nice. I did not like... the government does a lot of handouts to a lot of people, I think you'd see. Now, I know I'm coming off maybe as a darling of the left right now, but you got to talk tough and talk truth to the left as well. Because they're out here giving the millennials a lot of stuff for free. Okay? Oh, you're Italian? You got to pay top dollar. Oh, you're a black? You get all the health insurance. You get Nona's health insurance while she's dying at 99, a spring chicken. No, give it to Malcolm and Deshaun. They can have the health insurance, right? They get everything for free. Oh, you're an immigrant, Manuel. Come right this way. You get a fucking hotel in New York. I had to stay in a hostel before I fucking killed this guy. But you got Manuel and Noriega and all the other, you know, coming in, Sanchez Diaz, getting hotels, room service. That's what we do in this country. So, you know, I'm mad at the CEOs, but also I'm mad at some people letting this happen because in our country, we should be taking care of us first. And
I never expected to hear that come out of your mouth.
Well, you need somebody who's going to talk the truth to both sides, Mike.
Right.
And
are you sure that, Luigi, you look a lot like somebody else that is on the show quite a bit.
It You talking about my third cousin, Vinny?
You wouldn't happen to be trying to pull the wool over my eyes, would you? Vinny.
No.
That's not you, is it, Vinny?
That's not Vinny. Vinny's my third cousin.
You sure?
I'm totally sure. I went to University of Pittsburghvania, and I did come loudly.
All right.
Okay.
I'm just making sure.
No, that's, because
it's a similar hat.
I'm Luigi Mario Brothers.
Oh, okay.
That's
all right.
Me. I'm the guy.
Okay.
All right. Well, I got to get out of here. I don't like your tone. I thought this was going to be a friendly show. Turns out you're very anti-Italian and very anti-healthcare killing. So, you know, I'll get your woke buddy back in here. You guys can continue to talk whatever fucking bullshit. Bye.
JL, are you back?
Oh, man. That was a long shit. What's up?
I don't know that that was Luigi.
No?
Who do you think that was? Was Vinny the Guinea. Pretending to be.
Oh, gross. You know, in this.
The shooter.
To do that. This is what I'm talking about. The lack of just sort of empathy, the lack of decency. Vinny, who I already don't like, you know that.
Yeah, of course.
Low class piece of shit that he is. And he's coming, and it's a low move even for him.
Yeah.
Low move even for him.
To pretend to be the shooter of the healthcare, United Healthcare. I mean, good God.
I mean, you would probably call that stolen valor.
I would, yeah.
Oh, you would?
I would.
I wouldn't call that valor.
Well, we two different Americas.
Oh, so you're not on the sort of you are fully just on the Ronnie train to.
No, but I mean, it is valor. I mean, he is a you know.
Oh, there's like that Bill Maher thing that got him in trouble.
What?
When people called the 9/11 terrorists cowards. He goes, there are a lot of things, but they're not cowards.
I mean, he was like, if you want to define the word, right.
Like, but that's what you're doing. You're saying he's got valor because, yes, he does. He's got valor. How about you? But how do we bring back, and then we're just going to talk for a couple minutes, and then we got comedy talk.
Yep.
But in all seriousness, that was just some levity, some very dark levity.
Yeah.
But I don't know how we bring back sort of decency, because I think the root cause of this is not going to be addressed. And it really does feel like it's in our bones now. It's like social media was this like radiation that like seeped into our social media, smartphones, that whole, the last 15 years. And it's, to me, we got wise to the cigarette manufacturers.
Ah, dude, yeah, I know what you're going to say, and but I to completely me, agree. You beat me to this.
But to me, the problem is the cigarette manufacturers, once they were found out, they lost.
Yeah.
Cost a lot of money, took a lot of effort. But trying to take out social media and change social media, and by the way, now that they got all their Bitcoin money, that's never going away. Like
social media?
No, Bitcoin. Like all these things that the tech bros love.
Yeah.
Now it's too valuable for them to abandon it because then it will cause market ripples if it crashes again. Yeah. But with social media, it's like cigarettes, except the cigarette is telling, it's like your doctor is telling you, no, smoke.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like your legislator is saying, No. They're fine.
Yeah.
Smoke. The way to solve smoking is to smoke more.
Yeah.
Engage content, more smoking.
JL, you need to relax. Here's a cigarette.
But it's like, that is the level we're at with social media where it's like, how do we fight this? Well, let me get on social media and fight. Like, it's like to cure your addiction to smoking, you know what the cure is? More cigarettes. More cigarettes, if I can go George Carlin on it. These fucks. So you say, I need to quit smoking. And your doctor, that piece of shit, says, how about more cigarettes? That's the difficulty. Separating from social media, it's the new crack, but with triple the money of big tobacco.
Yep.
And fewer people fighting it.
Yep.
Like it is the addiction of our time. And I think it is ruining us as people. And like I said, my superpower, I think, is that I already, you know, to quote the great Hulk from one of the Avengers movies, How do you control your temper? I'm angry all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I am an angry person. So I don't get angry from social media. In fact, I go and I go, fuck this.
Yeah.
Like, I verbally slap somebody who annoys me and then I get off social media. It annoys me. I don't go there to feed my anger. I don't need it to feed my anger. In a way, that's almost my strength, is that it doesn't do as much for me because I already am like disdainful of it. And I think we are in serious trouble. And I think I brought these two cases up, obviously different cases, but just to make the point that something radical has to change. And I honestly think it's deeper than policy. Policies would help, you know, but who's going to sign the bill that says no smartphones in anyone's hand till you're 21? No social media for kids under the age of 18.
But you also have to wean people off the addiction, which is the more difficult part, I think.
Yeah.
And I do wonder now why people still would want to do this, gain some sort of influence to become, do you watch South Park at all?
I haven't in a while.
Dude, they did this, to make it short, they did this really great season where they did this whole arc where essentially it's like, trolling gets so bad on the internet, and uh-huh. There's, again, them being ahead of their time, trolling gets so bad on the internet that what happens is Denmark decides that they're going to launch this thing called Troll Trace, which releases you could just search Google, like you could Google JL Covant and be like, you can just find anything that you've done on the internet. It's public that like, if you trolled somebody with cancer and was like, fuck you, bitch, or like somebody could just look that up. So all of your disgraces could be basically like on blast. And that's like what it all leads up to in that season of South Park, is sort of everybody is just like, now that these things could be public, people are like, oh my God, like this, now there's panic. And I really do think that it would have to take something like that.
That's like something out of a Dan Brown novel.
Yeah.
Where it's like some JL Coscarelli minded super hacker is just like a database. Everyone on earth, your internet's public.
Right.
From porn to death threats to cheating to racial slurs to credit card bill, everything. And it's sad. That is probably what it would take. That would reconstruct society, I think.
Because, I mean, listen, man, what else? You've kind of given away privacy. And everybody, I know, what's that old adage that like, I'm going to fuck it up, so I won't even say it.
I'd be embarrassed if somebody just unlocked the like tab on my TikTok account.
Yeah.
Wow, JL, you seem to be a big fan of comedy, acrobatics, and tits.
Yeah, right. Yeah, dude. And it's like you put all this stuff into the cloud, and it's just
guilty
like,
as charged, by the
anything
way.
Anything can be hacked at any time. Like you would have thought that women would just... But this is what ends up happening. I remember when that first nude leak happened, the fappening... And it was all these like movie stars that got their shit hacked and, you know, their nudes went out.
I remember that, but, and I'm not even kidding, I didn't look at any of them.
I did, and I regret it now. I feel like it's a major invasion of privacy, but I was like 25 when it happened and was just like, great, pair of tits, awesome. But you would have thought that would have basically made everybody be like, I'll never send a nude again. But what I think it actually did was just normalize the fact that like everybody's going to do it. So there's nothing to be ashamed of. So just send it. And I think every time you do that, you're kind of breaking down another wall of somebody's privacy and what they're willing to allow to be public.
Right.
And it just starts to corrode. And, you know, now we're 10 years after that. And I just think that people are so used to not having privacy and expecting to not have it that they're just sort of okay with it. When really, if you just stopped posting every thought that you have, every picture that you have, if you just stopped posting everything, hold you on, would kind of, you would go away.
Hold on for a second. Hey guys, great episode of the podcast right now. We're talking about how we should stop sharing things online. It's really good stuff. I hope you'll smash that subscribe button.
But to your point, JL, about this being cigarettes, and this is like what I was thinking about today before you came in, because I'm trying.
Can I ask you one joke? Do you think it's funny that I one time wrote that Donald Trump, if they ever made a black bachelorette, he would call her Nicorette?
Yeah, I do think that's
funny. Because smoking.
Yes. Anyway, yeah. But I'm trying very hard now to move off social media. I'm trying to like phase it out and just not use it anymore because I don't think it's serving me, and I can't imagine living the rest of my life just constantly scrolling. If I live another 30 years, that's fucking crazy to think about. You're going to waste a lot of it just scrolling on a phone.
One of the glorious things that just on that specific note, one of the great things I do think of when I think about quitting comedy. Is would I quit every social media platform? Probably not, because there are some people I would just want to follow and keep in contact with. But would Instagram, I'd have no purpose to have Instagram.
Yeah.
I'd have no purpose to be on Twitter, the site that has both lifted and ruined my career.
Yeah.
YouTube, I don't have to read shit on YouTube. I can like take it off my phone. And if I want to make a video and make comedy, I can do that. And it's not social media. It's only social media if you make it
and you're
social
interacting.
And you interact. Right. So like I like the thought of that now.
Yeah.
I feel like I have like drained myself of like the enjoyment of social media.
Right. Same.
And the more aware I become of like how I believe it is hurting us. But I don't want to separate the smartphone from that. The smartphone is at best the crack pipe delivering the crack.
Yeah.
But it's still paraphernalia at best.
But the point that I was getting to with this is essentially like if you try to tell somebody that you don't have an Instagram and you don't want to be online, it's like telling somebody that you don't smoke in like 1955. People are just floored by it. They're just like, what? How do you get your news? How do you do whatever? And that's a problem because you shouldn't be seen as like some fucking hipster who wants to get up. Like, it seems at this point we're all pretty aware that it's bad for us.
Yeah.
So it's like, would you paint your house with lead paint in 2024?
Yes.
You know, you shouldn't.
Oh, no.
But no.
Okay, no.
But I think that like until the grip loosens and people are just sort of like, dude, I got rid of social media and like I'm not going to go back because I just feel less anxious and I feel less mentally ill by not just taking all this information in all the time. I mean, I just don't see how we move past it. And I think that it is in and of itself is enough proof that this is a really bad thing, that people are just like, basically, if you don't have social media, you don't exist.
Right.
And this idea that it's like, well, how are people going to reach me? Or how are people? It's like, what do you mean? How are people going to reach you? The people that you need to be reached by probably know how to get to you.
Right.
You know? Like in the old days, you would just give somebody your phone number and if they had it, they could call you. And if they don't, then, you know, they don't, then you have peace, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just crazy to me. And to think that there's like a level of clarity that you don't really have to opt in to this, how fast paced and how bad all of this is for you, you know?
But in all seriousness, like this doesn't change my feeling as I articulate and I understand where you're coming from. And I hope people enjoyed that exchange. But I think this.
That means you hated what I said.
No, no. You see how I had to pause to like really come up with my reply. That was a thoughtful pause, not a what the fuck are you talking about pause.
Okay.
But I just think the issue for me is we can talk about the healthcare CEO, but I also think it's very fitting in a parallel way. I'm sure somebody in the New Yorker or the Atlantic will write this very poetic book about Jordan Neely and Brian Thompson. And these two men were slain and glee on either side of the aisle, like and disrespect and no sympathy and thinking that, yes, you have to be 100% right. It's not good enough to have a nuanced thought on it. You have to be like, no, the killing was justified. Fuck them. No, in the other case, fuck them. The killing was justified. And I think if people think smoking was tough and everything, the amount of money the tech people have, that they will be able to, they own the means of communicating. So how do you get the message that we need to change as a people if they are the drug pushers? In the words of Gandalf at the end of Two Towers, the battle of health insurance is over. The battle for social media has begun. But it is this bigger problem is who we've become as people. And I, for one, would love to give a speech at some point speaking to our personal failings that we all have now, and how that's going to hold us back. And will tech CEOs hate me for it? Yes. But I hate them.
Yeah.
And I hate their product. They are, but it is a bigger problem than I think people realize. We can talk about AI and all these other things, but this business, the tech business, is like going to stop us from making the change, will in part stop us from making the changes we need both as a society and as individuals. And, you know, Michael Jackson said it before he diddled some kids. Ugh. You know, man in the mirror.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Stop.
So I have to get to a freak off, but let's take one more break and I'll do a quick comedy talk. See you after the break. And we're back. Mike, I didn't even ask you how that first break was because I wasn't here.
Yeah, that's right.
But how was the second break?
Second break was great.
Okay.
I got a chance to, I feel like I'm heat checking a little bit today, this episode.
You've had a moment today.
Thanks, buddy.
That's good. I mean, I think my moment after that was a better moment, but you've had your moment.
Oh, we're comparing moments now. Okay. You're moment shaming me.
I don't really have a punch down of the week. I think we just destroyed all of social media.
Yeah.
I think that's enough of a punch down. But I did watch Jeff Dunham's stand-up, if you want to call it. His special to get me in the festive mood. And also, as everybody knows, I just finished season 3 of Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. So I'm waist deep in white American culture and garbage.
Yep.
But I thought I was going to hold off on Dunham till that episode. So it was like a complete, we're going Yellowstone. A
true American trilogy.
Yeah. We're going Yellowstone. We're going hockey. We're going Jeff Dunham.
Yeah.
We're going Morgan Whalen, just a real, let me absorb this and give my full critique and how I can use this culture to my advantage. But I said, nah, I wanted to watch a special last night to talk about one. And, I watched Jeff Dunham's on Amazon where he has his puppets out and, it's like a Christmas special.
Mm.
And I got to say, folks, I have my limits. Now, Yellowstone, I can see the value in Yellowstone. I can see the appeal. In fact, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I was talking about how representation matters to people and how you have to appreciate that everybody has those instincts. Everybody wants to see their stories or stories they can relate to. The difficulty is, you know, Black people, Latin people, women have sort of had to, you know,
take a back seat.
Well, not just take a back seat, but they've had no problem absorbing white stories,
right?
And looking at that and saying, okay, and now I'd like to hear my stories. And instead, that's sometimes looked at as like, hey, stop flooding me with your stories. It's a joke I once told about mahogany cards. I thought it was very fitting. 1 year, my mom bought me a mahogany card for a birthday card. That's for those of you who don't know, the sort of Black themed Hallmark cards.
Mm.
And I laughed because it was a mahogany card, but there was no picture of any mahogany person inside. And I was like, that's exactly how my mom sees me.
Right.
I know you're a mahogany, but I don't see it.
That is so funny.
But that's my joke about it. But that's true. She did give me a card. I don't think she even looked. She just read it and was like, here.
Yeah.
But I once joked with somebody I may have made this joke when I was like in college or something, where I was like, oh, wouldn't it be funny to get like your white mom a mahogany card or your white dad a mahogany card? And then I literally checked myself and said, but haven't Black people, Latin people just been getting white cards, if you will, for their and that's just been what they've had to do. So I'm trying. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do the work, Mike. But Jeff Dunham is my limit. That's my limit. Okay.
Everybody's
got to have their limit. But first of all, his puppets are annoying. But his crowd, and I'm sorry to do this, it's the way I feel sometimes, looking at his crowd, and it's so white. Mm-hmm. And he has just enough, he has a couple of Republican jokes, and not jokes about Republicans, jokes about Democrats. So he knows his audience. He's probably a Republican. He's probably like, you know, a prayerful Christian man who, I don't know, mm-hmm. but who votes for anti-Christian policies and politicians. Mm-hmm. But his crowd was so white and it was just so old fashioned where I was like, you're all Jeff Dunham fans. So you've seen this shit before. Do you know what I mean? Like there's nothing new coming out of this guy and it's not good enough. This isn't fucking the Stones playing Satisfaction for the 100th time where you're like, keep it coming, Mick.
Rock on.
You're just like, bah, 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 bah. Democrats, bah. Yeah, yeah. Penis joke, gay joke. Yeah. I didn't know that Priuses were a code in the Jeff Dunham world for gay.
Yeah.
But I guess they are. I guess if you drive a Prius, you're gay, and that gets a lot of... from the crowd.
Yeah.
It's very mediocre. And I know this is not news to people, but I'm saying in the spirit of what this show is. Now, this is, if anything, if we trimmed this episode of The Fat, this would be my message to America, a speech on my Carter Malaise speech, which went over well until it didn't, but it actually had an initially good response when he gave it. But this would be my sort of, how do we cure? We've got to face our problems as a nation, not in a, we have to look at each other and see the humanity, not in the, I'm talking in the dirt. Like we're fucked.
Yeah.
We gotta figure some shit out and we got to maybe consider self-checking our, checking ourselves on our social media and our phones and getting out and reading more and meeting people more and not living in our phones. And if that takes some addiction counseling or something, then damn it, do it, because we'd see the results. The results are a net negative. So when I talk about net negatives, it makes me think of Jeff Dunham. And it was so bad that I said, okay, it's important to have your limits as a candidate culturally. Like, I'm not going to pander and go, we got Jeff Dunham for the crowd. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I still have my integrity as a comedian. I don't. Yellowstone, fine. There's stars in that. There's value in that. Morgan Wallen, even my brother said, I was really pissed that he, you know, because he got a couple songs that I think are really awesome, but I just stopped listening to him after he was an N-word user. But Jeff Dunham, that's the limit, folks. It's cheesy, but in cheesy in that way of like the youth pastor who gives a good sermon and then tells like the abused kid to be quiet because we wouldn't want mom and dad to get in trouble now, would we? There's a little bit of that vibe to him because it's so squeaky clean and useless, his comedy. It's so useless. And I've never said that about comedy. It's so useless. Like, it doesn't challenge you, but it's not super witty. And he doesn't strike me as, like, the greatest ventriloquist. It's not like he's thrown his voice.
No, he doesn't, does he?
He's just like, hey, guys. So, anyway, I'm an old guy. And I'm a little racist. But he drives a Prius. Does he drive a Prius? And he sucks on high. Okay, enough, crazy guy. Well, guess what? Oh, here comes the terrorist, the cleanser, Ahmed. I kill you. I kill you. Look at this guy. I kill him. Good night, everybody. I'm Jeff Dunham. I'm fucking worth $100 million. You all should be ashamed of yourselves. So when it comes to, it's good to have boundaries because you don't want to seem like you're pandering. I want to like explore the things that are like, I watched Shaboozy on SNL. And I'm going to say this right now. He did one song to lead off his set. Really good. Then he did his hit song. That's been number one for 19 weeks. Shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest song like of all time. It's very generic and very simple. It's not that it's not catchy. It's just like, at what point does familiarity not breed boredom?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I've heard a catchy, like, ding, man, damn, damn, damn. Like, the first song he did, I hadn't heard, and that was really good. But Jeff Dunham, just useless comedy. And that's my limit. So if you ever hear me say, You know who I'm a big fan of at like an Iowa State fair or something? That Jeff Dunham. He's a riot, isn't he? You out me with this clip and say, no, J.O.'s lost his purity.
Got it.
So Jeff Dunham, his Christmas Carol stand-up special. It should be called The Limits of JL's Patience with the Saddest Parts of White America on Amazon Prime right now, streaming on Amazon Prime. So that's it, everybody. Thank you for this, for listening to or watching this episode. Please share it. I think we're building something pretty cool here. This wasn't as targeted a campaign episode, but I think it's stuff we had to talk about. And it still outlines a little bit of my vision for the hard work that needs to go on in this country.
That's right.
And maybe the hardest work, honestly, harder than fighting climate change, fighting ourselves, finding our inner truth, Mike, and our inner beauty and our inner whatever, inner. But yeah, come to some of the shows. Mike, you can do the blah, blah, blah. Thank you for listening, everybody. Mike, you do the announcements and we'll get out of here.
Well, obviously, everybody, if you're listening to the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please go over to YouTube and subscribe to the show there. We have a comment section. People are really nice in the comments, which is shocking, but you can use that as sort of a forum to discuss the episode. If you've got a hot take on the assassination of the United Healthcare CEO, we want to hear about it. Throw it in the comments and, we appreciate you listening, and that's it, JL.
Yes, we do appreciate you. That's it. So be decent. Other than this podcast, spend a little less time online, a little less time on social media.
Yep.
I think that is a real cure, unfortunately, and it's a very tough ask. But I think that is a foundational thing that we are angrier and we are worse. And I think you can really point to the smartphone and social media as real accelerants, if nothing else, to our problem. So we both appreciate you listening. Please leave a nice review. If you can, share it with a friend, and I will see you next Thursday.